All my notes are here from Wednesday night. The class that I taught on Wednesday night was Drugs and Alcohol in the Bible. I left it up there. I said, well, you know, when I saw it still up there today, I said, well, maybe. How many of you are here Wednesday night? Roger? Dakota? This place was filled up Wednesday night. I mean, it was full. We didn't have another chair. I think Mike and Kathy came wandering by. You didn't see a chair sitting in here, did you? There wasn't the same empty chair in the house. I'm going to give you a choice this morning. I was going to teach from Luke, the 6th chapter. Would you like to hear this lesson up here? How many of you like to listen to this lesson? Would you like that? Very, very important lesson. Well, all those in favor. Oh, you want to do it again, huh? Two times? All right. We'll do it then. I'll get my notes out. I had a printout for everybody last Wednesday night. It was like this, alcohol and drugs in the Bible. And it had all the different words, which I don't have done today. So you'll have to do without that. See what I can remember here. By the way, here's our monthly readout with a new website. Blue is the United States. Now, there's a lot of downloads. By the way, last Wednesday night, the class I did last Wednesday night, I looked this morning, there's over 300 downloads on it already. That's on sermon audio only. I don't know. They like that class. The green is China. The green is China. That's how many people are listening in China. The orange is the Middle East. Now, that's something, people. That's something. Anyway, if you want to look and see what they're doing over there, there it is. Yes. I need a lot of copies of them. Okay, we can have copies of this. There is 4 pages here.
Okay.
All right. 4 pages. Yeah, whatever. 20 will do it.
Would it be okay if I looked at that download?
What?
Would it be okay if I looked at that?
Well, sure. This is just on one website. There's the other websites are up there. You can see the... There's actually 4 websites now that you're all part of. All of you are part of this, okay? Alcohol and drugs in the Bible. I want to bring a little story to you to begin with. Sister Andino, you're back there. And you know who Benjamin Marcus Bogard was.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin Marcus Bogard was a brilliant missionary Baptist, Southern Baptist preacher from the late 1800s to 1950. He always said that the lie could get 100 miles before the truth could get its boots on. A lie can get 100 miles before the truth can get its boots on. And that's basically what the problem here with this is. Okay? And my little cousin right there. Now, I told her here a while back that she was related to Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle. Remember that? He's your relative. He's my relative. He's your relative by blood. And he's my relative by marriage. Roscoe Arbuckle was one of the greatest movie stars in the history of America. His career was completely destroyed by lies. He was completely destroyed by lies. In 1921, he got Charlie Chaplin in the movie. Anybody ever hear of Charlie Chaplin? I mean, this goes way back. He got Bob Hope in the movies. Buster Keaton. He drugged Buster Keaton off the street out there, and he said, "Come here, you want to be in the movies?" He put him in there, and one of the scenes where he was, Buster Keaton was really an acrobat. Well, Fatty Arbuckle was 266 pounds, and they called him Fatty Arbuckle, which he was very conscious of his weight all the time, but he was like an acrobat. He could do flips, somersaults, and flips and everything just all over the place. And we showed a little movie about him here on Wednesday night, just a little short movie. And I mean, that man was unbelievable acrobat and strong as a bull. When they went out there in the movie, the props back then were not props, they were real. Buster Keaton said he threw a heavy set flour sack at me and hit me in the head with it, and my feet ended up being where my head was. He clotheslined him. He said, that's just the way it was back then. He would go out there and he would pick up a car and they changed the tire on it. He really picked up the car. In one scene in the movie, he picked up a piano and threw it, an upright piano, and threw it through a wall. He actually did that. Okay? He was an actor, a comedian, he was a director, and a writer in the movies. In 1921, in San Francisco, there was a party that he threw up there, and a lot of movie stars went to it. And the never-do-wells come by, too, the people that are always looking to rip you off and steal from you and whatever, you know, they came in also. And in there was a woman that had a very bad reputation. She came in there also. She was a kind of a starlet also, Virginia Rappi. And she was so drunk she fell on Roscoe Arbuckle's knee and hit herself in the stomach. During the party, she was falling all over the place. She was a drunk. She was terrible. She'd had a lot of abortions, and her body and her health was just terrible. Well, he found her in his hotel room, and she was vomiting and everything, and he called the house doctor and everything. They said, well, she's just drunk. She said she was dying. They put her in a bathtub with cool water. She said she had a big high fever and everything else. Anyway, 2 days later, she died. From complications from abortions and peritonitis. Well, there was a con artist and a prostitute there that came along with this bunch that came in here, and her name was Miss Delmont, that is. And then we had a district attorney in San Francisco by the name of Matthew Brady that was very, very politically charged. He wanted to be a big shot. So here's this woman that dies in this hospital, and she had seen quite a few doctors afterwards and everything. All of them, you know, there was nothing there. Well, this other woman, this con artist and prostitute and whatever, she told the sheriff's this Matthew Brady that Roscoe Arbuckle had raped this woman. And, of course, the woman never said that. None of the doctors had any evidence of that. But William Randolph Hearst, you know who he was? He took off with the story. It went through three trials. Trial number one, Matthew Brady had somebody on the jury that wouldn't give up. Mistrial. Number two, he had another person on the jury, another one of his relatives. They wouldn't give up. Number three jury, the third time they tried the case, the jury said, it's not enough to say he's not guilty. He's not guilty. In 1 minute, they figured that out. There was no evidence against him. The man had done nothing wrong. In the meanwhile, he had been thrown out of Hollywood. All of his pictures started being destroyed. They demanded that they destroy his pictures. All the movies that he'd done, he did lots of movies. The jury deliberated for 6 minutes. 5 minutes of that was writing an apology to him for having put him through all of this nonsense and everything that had happened to him. And still, they kicked him out of Hollywood. He had done nothing. All the other movie stars in Hollywood said he was probably the most moral character in Hollywood. Buster Keaton gave 35% of all his movies to help support Roscoe Arbuckle. Finally, he got back in the movies. That was 1921. He started back in. They finally forgot enough about the baloney and the lies. No matter what he was in. And this is the bad thing. Churches all over the nation demanded his execution. The man was not, he was innocent. He had nothing to do with what happened there. Period. But see, a lie can get 100 miles before the truth can get its boots on. Now let's go back and look in the Bible about what the Bible says about drugs and alcohol. Really what it says. Not what is going around, not what's the cliche today, but what really is going on. First of all, let's try hard drugs. We're going to take a look at hard drugs. What kind of a drug is a hard drug?
Heroin, methamphetamine.
Yeah, methamphetamines. By the way, the word methusma or methe is right out of that. We're going to look at that word in Hebrew for alcohol. Strong drink. Okay. How about laudanum?
That's almost straight
hard to get nowadays.
Yeah, laudanum. All right. What is the pure form of laudanum?
Opium.
You know that opium and laudanum was legal to just buy anywhere in America until 1928? Every sideshow with all this miracle drugs, the snake oil dealers, had laudanum in it. What was laudanum used for? What was laudanum? Pain. It was used for pain. Okay? Now, by the way, only rich people in the Bible days could use laudanum. Only rich people. Okay? We're going into the hard drugs. Yes, Brother Bill?
Bayer aspirin, when they first came into business, they were had opium in them.
Yeah. All medicines. Now, they always, when they administered opium, they'd always administer it with alcohol. Either wine or whiskey or beer or something. They used it with it because it worked better. Okay? Laudanum was the treatment for tuberculosis, dysentery, diarrhea, spastic colon, any type of colon disease that they had back then. Laudanum was what they used for it. Okay? And that was something that they used in the Bible. Can anybody give me two examples of when laudanum was used as a gift in the Bible? We don't have time to go into all this. Now, Brother Roger, you know this. Dakota, you can't. Don't say a word now. Don't say a word. Alright. Where was laudanum or opium used as a great gracious gift in the Bible? Tell me. I know Roger knows. Sister Andito, you know? How many of you took my Hebrew classes? All right, my Hebrew people will know this, okay, I think. When Jacob sent an offering to Pharaoh and Joseph in Egypt, you know what one of the major portions of that offering was? Opium. It's called myrrh in the Bible, myrrh. Myrrh means bitter, and it is opium. Opium was a drug that they used for all types of, you know, arthritis. I hardly ever shake hands anymore because my hands are so crippled that it just, my middle finger just comes out of place if somebody even puts the slightest amount of pressure. My knuckles are gone. Opium is a strong drug. Okay? Back in the Bible days, only the richest people could afford this type of drug. Okay? So Jacob, he sent opium to Joseph in Egypt. You can go back and look in the book of Genesis and see that.
Isn't that where they say frankincense and myrrh?
That's right. Myrrh? Yeah. Who else in the New Testament got a gift of opium? Who? The three magi, or whoever, maybe 300, however many of those magi there were, when they came to worship Jesus, they brought a strong medicine and painkiller that was called opium. That was one of the major gifts that they brought to Jesus. Okay? Now, in America, we have a real strong regulation on all types of addictive drugs, don't we? Except for alcohol. We have a real strong regulation on them because they're addictive. And we didn't have a laudanum or opium that was completely unregulated in America until 1928. Okay? Until 1928. And of course we know that they used it in the Bible days. You go back and you'll find out that myrrh was even used in the temple and the tabernacle services. Okay? Now let's go back. Marilyn's not back here yet. And since I had all this, is this all right with you? Are you enjoying this? Now, we have our church covenant says that we will not use tobacco or alcohol at all. Okay? That's what it says. Okay? And it's really a good thing that if you didn't do that. My grandma used to tell me all the time, Grams, she said, Jimmy, when you get a little older, she said, take a little snuff every day. You'll never get worms. Did she ever tell you that? You'll never get worms or hemorrhoids.
That was a lady's drug of choice.
Okay, laudanum in the Victorian age was a very click usage. I mean, some of the richest people, the kings and queens all over, they used laudanum every day because they could afford it. All right? They could afford it. Now, there's basically 11 Hebrew words that deal with alcoholic beverages in the Bible. One of them is yayin. Okay, yayin. See that one up there? You see it? See, I even wrote it out in English, so you can see it. Yayin. All right? Yayin is basically wine. Okay? It is wine. All right? The equivalent of it in Greek is glucose and katoia nuste, and it means drunken. They drank wine and they got drunk. Okay? They drank wine and they got drunk. Genesis 9 and verse 21, what happened there? Genesis 9 and 21. Every time, you know, alcohol is a drug. Alcohol is a drug. Now, many doctors today, when people have, you know, get older and they start having heart problems, like Brother Mike over there and me, and my heart beat me up all day yesterday and today so far, but they tell you to drink a glass of wine, the alcohol. Very few alcoholics have bad arteries. They're just as slick as they can be. They die of cirrhosis of the liver. And drug addiction. Okay? Yayin. It's on page 406 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs. And it's on 3196 in Strong's. You know Strong's Concordance? I even put that down there for you. It's a common word translated wine. Melchizedek in Genesis 14 and 18 gave wine to Abraham. This is the word. It's alcoholic wine. This is all alcoholic wine that we're talking about. We're not talking about anything else. A lot of people today are saying, and there's books being written, that all the words in the Bible that use wine, it means grape juice. And it's unfermented and not wine. That's not true. But they'll say it. There's books written about this. Okay? Lots of books. Another word is tirosh. 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 Genesis 27, 28, Numbers 18 and 12, Deuteronomy 7 and 13, Judges 9 and 13, Zechariah 9 and 17. By the way, that word is used 38 times in the Old Testament. Okay? And it's on page 440 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs, on 8498 in the back of your Bible there, Brother Mike. properly sometimes rendered wine, new wine, sweet wine. It can represent juice at any stage in the fermentation process, but it always has alcohol in it. It means the first drippings of the juice before the wine press was trodden. In other words, it would be very, very potent. Very, very potent. And Hosea 4 and verse 11 also. The Greek equivalent of this is methusmah, or oinos, which is alcoholic wine. Methusmah, we get our word methamphetamine from it. Okay? Now we come to the word shikar. That word means pleasure. Pleasure. Happiness. Like Brother Abe was saying, everybody on that little cart down there, or little train there, was all smiling. All smiling. It means to satiate. Strong drink denotes a drink that makes you drunk from 7 to 10% alcoholic content in this shikar. This is going to really make you smile, see, okay? That's what it means. Pleasure. It's not whiskey or brandy or anything like that, but it can be made from barley. It can be a strong ale. And they used a lot of ale, by the way, in the biblical days. Did you know that? When the poor man was beat up and robbed, and the Good Samaritan got him, what did he do to him? It said he gave him wine. Probably wouldn't blot in a minute. Okay, for his pains and aches. And he poured wine on his wounds, and he poured oil on them, and olive oil is also a good disinfectant and medicine. And he wrapped him all up. It can either be made from fruit, barley, wheat, and in America they used corn, corn whiskey, you know. And the more sugar it's got in it, the stronger the alcohol and the higher alcohol. When they used to look for moonshines in Tennessee and Kentucky and everything, they wanted to know who was buying most sugar and molasses. That's how it would track them down. Methusmah, oinos, and sikara are the words in the New Testament that are equivalent to that. We're going to go into the New Testament words here pretty soon. Chamar. That's the word right here. All right. That means wine. It has the idea of the word red in it. Red. And it means foaming, like champagne. Okay, now they had all these things back in the Bible days. Did you know that? It means the fermentation. It also means poured out. And to boil up, like champagne boils up. You can even buy alcoholless champagne, can't you? How many of you have had alcoholless champagne? That drink that you get with grape juice and they've got all different kinds from it. I can't. It's carbonated, yes. But that's the word from there. But it actually, what? Sparkling water, sparkling grape juice, or sparklings, or whatever, you know, that's what it is. And that's what this word means, is to boil up. But it means like champagne. Okay? Then we come from the word asis. Asis. This word right here, asis. Asis. By the way, the last word there, Isaiah 27 verse 2, Ezra 6 and 9. You can look it up on 2561 and 2562 in Strong's, and it's on page 330 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs. It has the idea of drunkenness. Very strong drink. This word, asis now, means sweet wine or new wine. It's a wine of the current year. It's not aged a long time. It's got a lot of alcohol in it. It can also mean even vinegar, wine that turned to vinegar. and they use that. And Isaiah 49 and verse 26, and Joel 1 and 5 and 3:18, and Amos 9 and verse 13 are scriptures that go to this. And 6,071 and 779 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs. It means something that's just been pressed. Okay? A lot of people say, well, this is grape juice. We're going to get that to that word also later on. Okay? Grape juice, Genomatos Tason Plu. It means glucosmos or sweetness. Methe, strong drink, a drunkenness. Nama oinos neos. Okay? Another word is chametz. Chametz. That's the word right here, chametz. Chametz. Let's look at that one. That means vinegar, which is made from wine or other fermented beverages. It can mean also beer also. It's used with a condiment or something else with it, mixed with it. It's a you can even mix this one with water. This could be the common drink of Israel, where they took the wine and they would purify the water with it. They'd have a little alcohol in it because the alcohol would purify the water, because there was a lot of bad bacteria in the water in those days. Shemar, this one right here. By the way, the last one was on page 2558. And page 330 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs. That word chametz. All right, shemar. Shemar. Or shemarim. It comes from the word dregs. Dregs. Or lees. And it's wine or beer with a lot of flavor, strong flavor. They left it in the dregs or the lees. Okay? It's alcoholic, and it has a strong taste to it, very strong flavor. And then we have the word sovi, right here, and that's on page 685 in Brown, Driver, Briggs, and 5435 in Strong's. This is a very strong liquor or wine. Very strong. False reference in Greek to that is oinos. And Proverbs 23 and verse 20. Proverbs 23 and verse 20. That's where it says, let's go there real quick. Proverbs 23 and verse 20. This is one we need to look at. Proverbs 23 and verse 20. Proverbs 23 and verse 20. When you think about alcohol, and drugs, we need to see the effects of it. Never in the Bible does it ever commend a person for drinking and being a drunk, does it? Proverbs 23 and verse 20 and 23 and verse 30. All right, 20 says, "Do not be heavy drinkers of wine, or gluttonous eaters of meat." All right? It says in the start 23 and verse 1, it says, "When you sit down to dine with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you." And what does the next verse say? "And put a knife to your throat if you are a man of a great appetite." That means an appetite in food or wine. You're in the presence of a king, and anything you say can and will be used against you in the presence of this king. So when you start drinking too much, the mouth starts going too much sometimes, doesn't it? So it's right off the bat, take a knife and put it to your throat. Okay? On a little bit further, in verse number 30, 29 and 30. "Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaining? Who has wounds without cause? And who has redness of eyes? those who linger over wine, those who go to taste mixed wine. Do not look at on the wine when it is red. That's what we're talking about a while ago. That really high alcoholic wine that we're talking about, the one that had this real strong flavor, the burgundies and stuff like that. Okay? When it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly, as it lasts, it bites like a serpent, it stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things, and your mind will utter perverse things. Your mind will see such strange things. How many of you know what DTs are? They're bad, aren't they? You ever been around somebody with DTs? You see them climbing the wall, rolling around out in the yard, and they think worms are eating them up because they've got grass on them. They'll see strange things. That's what happens. I had a student one time. Came right off, right out of the gutter. And was in my class for several years, and he used to make a joke about going. He was drunk. He was an alcoholic. Once you're an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic. Did you know? You're never not an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic.
You're an
alcoholic to the day you die. Best thing to do is don't fool with it. That's dangerous stuff. All right. Alcohol. Well. He kept teasing about that for years, and he called me on the telephone. And he told me, he said he was going to die. He said, I'm going to die. And he said, I want you to do my funeral. I love that man. But you know what he did? He kept talking about going out and pulling a binging drunk, and he did. And he couldn't quit drinking. So he locked himself in his house, and he quit drinking, and he had DTs, and he had a convulsions, and died. And he knew he didn't want to die drunk. But he died. It took his life. It took his life. That's dangerous. Drugs and alcohol are dangerous. All right, now we look at the word mamsak. 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 All right. Is mixed drink, mixed wine, drink offering. It is a drink offering. Also, they use it as a drink offering. It's probably a mixture of wine, water, with spices to increase its stimulating properties. In Matthew 27, 34 through 38, and Mark 15 and verse 36, who did they offer this to? What was this drink? Who was this drink offered to? It was alcohol. Strong alcohol mixed with laudanum or opium. Brother Mike. That's right. They, all of the people, if the Roman soldiers had mercy upon those that were dying on the cross, dying in tremendous pain, they would take opium and strong alcohol and vinegar or whatever, and it's bitter. Bitter is bitter. And they would dip it in this and put it on the sponge, and they would suck it off the sponge. It would lessen their pain. Jesus refused it.
I thought it would make them live longer.
No. It was a painkiller is what it was. Painkiller. It doesn't matter when you're dying whether you get addicted or not, you know. The addiction doesn't matter then. People in the Civil War and all the different wars, when they got hurt in battle, their limbs were hurting, they had to cut an arm off, they would alcohol and laudanum, alcohol and opium. They'd just load them up, drink all of this you can drink, and they'd sit in there and drink it up, and then they'd hit them in the head with something. Sometimes they'd knock them out, hit them in the head, and they'd cut their arm off or whatever. That was anesthetic. Page number 4469 and 4538, and on page 587 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs. And I guess Marilyn got some of those things for you, maybe. Then we come to the last word in Hebrew, which is mezek. Mezek. And that's on page 4197 in Strong's and 561 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs. This is the water and wine drink. It's got alcohol in it, all right, but this is the one that they purified. This is mezek. This is the most common drank that they carried when they had the wine bottles in the New Testament time. They'd drain the wine out of it. You know, it would blow the bottle up and stretch the wineskins out. When we talk about the parable of the wineskins, you know, you can't put anything new wine and old wineskins. They'll bust. Okay? Anyway, they would pour half the wine out, and then they'd put water in it, and they would drink it, and it would purify the water. We've got Arrowhead now. And we have water companies that purify the water, and this water here tastes like it's got enough chlorine in it to kill anything. And the worms, probably. You don't even have to take a dip of snuff. This stuff would probably kill the worms. All right, let's go into the Greek New Testament. There is another one. Actually, a couple more words. Anob, enob, enob, here. Enob. Enob means a grape. It's round. Enob is like a grape. See this word right here, enob? You aren't going to have it down on yours. You're going to have to write it in. Enob. It means round. It means grape. What do you make out of grapes? What do you make out of grapes? What can you make out? Huh? Well, wine, but what do you can you make out of grapes? Maryland's making it right now.
Jam,
huh?
Jam, jelly,
raisins. Bill, you got it. You got an A plus. Raisins and raisin cakes. And when they had raisin and raisin cakes back then, what do you think they would pour over it? Real strong liquor, the strongest liquor to preserve it. Okay. And they would take these on trips. That's what David got. That's what the priest gave to David. Okay? Now, we know that when a priest was in service, he could not drink wine. He could not eat grapes. He could not eat raisins or anything. Because even if they ate raisins, it had alcohol in it, didn't it? And when a man was serving the Lord, they wanted him to have all of his faculties. Because if you're drinking... If you're drinking beer, if you're drinking wine, if you're drinking whiskey, you don't have all your faculties. I can guarantee you. And the priests could not do that. And who else in the Bible could not eat raisins, raisin cakes, eat grapes, or wine?
Nazarite.
The Nazarites, because he was basically a voluntary priest. Have you ever heard of somebody, they're crazier than a peach orchard boar? Have you ever heard that term? Have you, Chris, you heard that term? Crazier than a peach orchard boar? You know why you'd be crazier than a peach orchard boar? Because a peach orchard boar is drunk. He's out there eating the fallen fruit, which has got alcohol in it, and he gets out there and gets mean and mad and wild and acts like a drunk. Crazier than a peach orchard boar. All right. Goth. Gath. Gath in Hebrew means wine press. All right. It means wine press. Yegeb means a wine trough. These are all the different terms. Then we got another one. Purah. That means a wine vat or wine press. Isaiah 63 and verse 3. That's used one time in the Old Testament. Now let's go to the New Testament. Oinos. Oinos is this word. Oinos. We got our word wine right out of oinos. Okay? It's on page 285 in the Analytical Greek Lexicon, on number 3631 in Strong's. It is translated wine. A lot of people try to say, well, this wasn't alcoholic wine. Every Hebrew table had wine on it. Always. Did it not? The children, they would take the wine and they would mix it with water and give it to them. That's what they drank. The common drink, everybody walking around every day had a wine bottle with them with wine and water in it. They didn't drink straight water most of the time. If they did, they got sick. And when they got dysentery, the treatment was wine with laudanum in it. Okay? That was the treatment for it. Now, this word is used 37 times in the New Testament. Then we have the word glucose. That's sweet wine. Glucose, sweet wine. Where's Bonnie? Bonnie, I didn't even get a real bad black eye this time. See that? They operated on my left eye again instead of my right. She was at the eye doctor with me the other day. Sweet wine, sometimes rendered new wine. It's used in the New Testament and in the Septuagint. It's basically used one time in the New Testament, and the word glucose means sugar or real strong sweet. Okay. Then we have the word sikara. Sikara in the New Testament is a loan word from the Hebrew, which means strong drink. It's only used one time in the New Testament, and it's on page 366 in the analytical Greek lexicon, on 4608 in Strong's. This is strong alcohol. Then we have the word oxos. Oxos. Oxos is used five times in the New Testament. Where's that word? Oxos. Right there. That's the word oxos. And I think it's on the third page or whatever you got there. It means vinegar, sour wine, could be made from grape wine or fermented beverages, mixed with water, and it was a cheap drink of the poor of the Roman army. Okay? This is still enough alcohol in it to kill the bad bacteria. And then we have the word methusma. Methusma. Now, in this little thing which I got from Wikipedia, it says Septuagint only. But that's not true. They didn't know Greek well enough. All right? It is used 12 times in the New Testament. 12 times. It says over here Septuagint only according to Tarosh. All right? It is a very intoxicating drink. Luke 12 and verse 45, Ephesians 5:18. Ephesians 5:18 says, "Be not drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit." Don't be drunk with this strong wine. This is strong drink. 1 Thessalonians 5 and 7, 1 Corinthians 5 and 11, and 6 and 11, Matthew 24:49, John 2:10, Acts 2:15, 1 Corinthians 11 and 21, 1 Thessalonians 5 and 7, and Romans 17 and 2 and 6. So it's used a lot. All right? Genematos tesam plu. Do I have that up there? Genematos tesam plu. Genematos tesam plu. Genematos tesam plu. They didn't have that one down either. That's fruit of the vine. That's literally what it means, fruit of the vine. But every time Jesus, when he instituted the Lord's Supper, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, when he instituted the Lord's Supper, it says genematos tesam plu. It doesn't say oinos. It doesn't say any of these other words. It says genematos tesam plu. Okay? Genematos tesam plu. That means fruit of the vine. It can mean grape juice. But I can guarantee if it was sitting on that table for the Hasidor, for the cedar, for the Passover, it was alcoholic wine. Okay? It just was. It was alcoholic wine. In the 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, I believe it is, verse 21, Paul the Apostle was condemning the Corinthian church because what were they doing? Let's go there real quick. 1 Corinthians 11th chapter. Let's look at that. Now, they had genematos tesam plu. They had oinos. They had all of that on their tables. They had grapes, whatever. First Corinthians 11th chapter. Paul the Apostle is writing to this church, condemning the church. Verse 17 in the 11th chapter, "But in giving this instruction, I do not praise you because you come together, nor for the better, but for the worse. He said, you're going to church, and it's worse than if you were staying in your own home. For in the first place, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions existing among you, and I believe it. For there must also be factions among you, in order that those who are approved, you may become evident among you, and therefore when you meet together, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. Every time they had church, they were having the Lord's Supper. And Paul the Apostle said, don't do it. You're not supposed to have the Lord's Supper every time. Now, why is he telling them not to have the Lord's Supper every time? That's, we do that. The Lord's Supper is celebrated in many churches in Christendom throughout the country, aren't they? And it's called a sacrament. And that sacrament is supposed to have some type of conveyance of grace in it. The Lord's Supper does not convey any grace. What you do is you remember the Lord. Okay? In the Alcoholics Anonymous, they have a faction in that, a little subdivision in that, for alcoholic Catholic priests and Lutherans and whatever. These priests, every morning before they give the communion or the Eucharist, they have to fast. And so they're drinking alcohol. And by the way, the people, the communicants, don't get the alcohol. The priest drinks all the alcohol. He drinks the whole cup. And half the time, then for the rest of the day, when he's handing out all these wafers, he's drunker than a hoodow. And they become alcoholics, drinking this fermented wine. I knew a pastor that was a tremendous preacher. And he would not pastor any church that took wine for the Lord's Supper because he was an alcoholic. A church can take wine for the Lord's Supper. There's nothing wrong with it. That's what they were taking in the Lord's Day. Most churches today use grape juice, don't they? All right? And it looks like wine. It looks like blood, and that's what it's supposed to do. Grape juice. There's nothing wrong with taking grape juice. What they took in the first Lord's Supper was wine. Okay? And you can prove that from the Bible. And it was alcoholic wine. But this pastor that I knew would not pastor any church that took wine for the Lord's Supper because it was a temptation to him. And an alcoholic is always an alcoholic. You know how you keep from being an alcoholic? Don't drink. Don't drink. I couldn't prove to you from the Word of God that it'll tell you not to drink any wine or any beer. But if you do, it's a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous thing. Let's see what happened here in the church. For in your eating, each one takes his own supper first, and one is hungry and the other is drunk on his can. That's what it means. He's laying down, falling down drunk. He's drunk. Okay? I was raised with that. I have seen what alcohol can do to people. You don't want that. My cousin got me off and got me drunk one time when I was about 13 years old, and my great-grandmother was there, and she heard about me getting drunk, and she said, Jimmy, she says, bullets killed a lot of our family, but alcohol's killed more of them. Don't drink. She ought to know.
That wasn't me.
It wasn't you. No, it wasn't that cousin. Doris didn't do that to me. It wasn't Doris, okay? Don't you have houses in which to eat and drink, or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you? No, I will not praise you. Now the Lord's Supper. For I received from the Lord that which I also delivered you, that the Lord Jesus Christ, the night which he was betrayed, took bread. And we know that was unleavened bread too, don't we? And when he had given thanks, he broke it. And he said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. We do the Lord's Supper in remembrance of him. By the way, the Catholic Church has transubstantiation. Most of the Protestant churches have consubstantiation. Transubstantiation in the Catholic Church is when that water, when that wine becomes the blood of Jesus, literally, and that wafer becomes literally his body, and you are taking and eating and drinking. You're drinking his blood and eating his body, which is a conveyance of grace. It helps you get to heaven.
How many people died refusing to believe that?
Well, a lot of Baptists did. And then consubstantiation, Luther and Calvin both believed in consubstantiation. It really means that the real body and the blood of Jesus Christ is there, but really not really eating. Because, of course, they were Catholic priests, so they wouldn't. That was what we call a revision of transubstantiation. Number 25. And in the same way, he took the poterio, the cup. Now here, the word cup is used to symbolize wine. It's not. It doesn't say oinos there. It says poterio. Okay? But here, it's not talking about the brass cup, the glass cup, the styrofoam cup that Brother Bill's got in his hand right there. It's talking about what's in the cup. Okay? What's in the cup. Not the cup. In the movie Indiana Jones and I think it was The Last Crusade, where they went in there and they went in the place and they were going to find the Holy Grail, you know. And they went in there to find it, and they would drink from it. And it would either kill them or make them better. And one guy grabbed this beautiful golden cup and a silver chalice and all this kind of stuff. They drank from it. And then Indiana Jones, he goes over and he gets the common man, what he called the carpenter's cup, even though he wasn't a carpenter. He was a stonemason. And he drank from it, and everything was all right. The cup. It's not the cup. It's not the poterion. It's what's in the cup. The cup doesn't represent Christ's blood. It's what's in the cup. Okay? In the same way, he took the cup also, and after supper, saying this, this is the cup of the New Testament. All right? This is the blood of the New Testament. The New Covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Therefore, whoever eats the bread and drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner, he shall be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. Let a man examine himself, and so let him eat the bread and drink the cup. For he who eats and drinks, this is talking about the Lord's Supper. If you do it in an unworthy manner, something besides that, talking about the Lord's Supper now, and we could just blend consubstantiation and transubstantiation is all drinking damnation to them. They're trusting in that to save them, aren't they not? Are they not? They're trusting in it to save them or not. They're drinking damnation to themselves. That's the wrong reason to drink it. The wrong reason to take it. Judgment to himself, and he does not judge the body rightly. For this reason, many among you are weak and sick. That's what we call hamartiogenic illness. Sin caused. And a number of you are dead. God killed you. When you take the Lord's Supper, remember what it is. Remember what it's for. Alcohol and drugs are very, very dangerous. Alcohol and drugs are dangerous. The Bible verses that condemn drunkenness are Ephesians 5:18, Galatians 5:19 through 21, 1 Peter 4:3, 1 Timothy 3:3, and Titus 1 and 7, 1 Timothy 3:3 and Titus 1 and 7 are provisions there for electing a pastor or a deacon. A pastor should not be a drunk. A deacon should not be a drunk. They should not be given to a lot of wine. In other words, they don't drink until they're falling down drunk. My step-grandfather, Amadeo Lamucci, he drank wine all of his life. He didn't drink water. He grew up in Sicily. And he said the first bath I ever had was in wine. What would wine do? When you pour wine on a wound or something like that, what's it do?
Kills all the bad bacteria.
They would bathe the babies in wine. And they would take water and wine and give it to them. That's the first thing they gave it to them. Wine to a lot of people is food. They drink it. It's food. But I tell you what, how many of you ever had winos in your family? I have. I saw those people suffer. It's a horrible death, isn't it? That's a horrible death. You don't want that. You don't want that. I can't tell you from the Bible say, don't drink wine, don't drink beer. But if you do, you're taking a pistol and spinning it with one bullet in it and popping the trigger on your head every time. You know why? Because you could be one of those people that can't drink a little bit of wine or drink a little bit of beer. You could be the ones that it would be alcohol to you. Well, I hope that I help you? Did this cover a little ground? Next week we'll get to the sixth chapter of Luke. I had a real good lesson for you today. But that was up on the board, and I said, well, maybe I ought to. Is that all right? If you're glad I did it. All right. All right, Brother Bill.
You know, I missed the last couple of weeks, and this is my biggest time as Jim's class of the week. Dwayne knows that's my most exciting day.